About 6 years ago, I was in the kitchen, cooking and preparing for family and friends to come over to celebrate Memorial Day. And my six-year-old grandson barged into the kitchen, went into the refrigerator, pulled out an avocado, brought it over to me and said, "Nanny, can you cut two circles out of this and give it to me?" Well, I only had a few minutes to try to get ready, and I said, "Pumpkin, no, I can't do it right now. You gotta wait." And so he left, only to return a couple more times. It felt like maybe 2 seconds later, "Nanny, can you cut this in two circles for me?" After about the third time, I gave in and I said, "Fine, give me the avocado." I cut the two circles, I gave it to him, and off he went. Well, I finished my meal, and after about 20 minutes, I realized that I didn't hear him moving anymore in the house. So I thought I should go check on him. So I go into the living room, and there he is, laid out on the sectional couch with his hands down to his side and two avocados on his eyes. I looked at him, I said, "Pumpkin, what are you doing?" And he looked at me and he said, "Nanny, sometimes you just need some peace and quiet and a place to reduce your stress." And then he said, "You ought to get you some of these, Nanny. You could use some to reduce your stress and get you some peace and quiet too." Now, I'm not so sure what he was stressed about at 6 years old, but I appreciated him reminding me of the challenge of peace in a stressful world. Amen? Because this really is all of our challenge. There are so many things in the world that cause us such deep stress, especially in the world that we're living in today. There's the violence of conflict and wars between countries and nations, and the threat of new uprisings in places like the Middle East, and Africa, and Iran, and around the world. There's sexual violence against women in the U.S. and around the world, where women are being criminalized, raped, assaulted, and their voices suppressed. There's the violence of racism and sexism, the violence that's connected to how we treat people in poverty, how we respond to difference of sexuality or religious tradition. And so when we think of all that we are faced with, how do we answer the challenge of peace? And Jesus lets us know in these readings that it's a peace that goes beyond just our resources, but it's a deeper peace, guided by the presence of Jesus within us. Especially as we celebrate Memorial Day, how do we answer the challenge of peace? Every year, two of our parishioners, Karen and Tom, organize a beautiful service of remembrance and hope on Memorial Day. It's held this Monday at 9 a.m. at the Sister Cities Bridge in downtown Rochester, and it's a wonderful opportunity to remember all the victims of current wars and to offer prayers of healing and of peace in search of a better way to address our social and political problems that we face. But this is the challenge of peace. Sometimes that challenge of peace shows up in how we are called to include others. In the first reading, the early church wrestled with this challenge of peace when it needed to figure out, how do we welcome Gentiles into this new sect of Jewish faith called Christianity? The Jewish tradition from that point was pretty clear and uncomplicated. Circumcision was how you became an official member of the doctrine of faith if you were male. But now the disciples in this first reading are being called to share this beautiful faith with the Gentiles, who aren't coming as babies, but who welcomed and embraced this faith in Jesus. And as the church moves to bring Jesus' message to the Gentiles, there became a debate. Some thought that the Mosaic law of circumcision should be a mandatory practice for all new Christians. Well, as you can imagine, the Gentiles, they didn't have the same allegiance, and they weren't rooted in the practice of circumcision, and quite frankly, they weren't interested in having surgery just to enter into the faith. Now, Paul and Barnabas disagreed with those who thought it should be mandatory, and this was a big wedge issue in the church. So imagine for a minute if you had to have eye surgery just to become a member of Spiritus Christi. Now, if you had eye trouble, that might be good for you, right? But if you don't, you might find that pretty hard to believe as a requirement. And so the question that the early church had to answer is the church and the faith open to everyone and every nation the way Jesus was open to anyone who believed his message, his teaching, and wanted to follow him? And of course, they came to the decision to lift all unnecessary burdens, to not require circumcision. In 1998, we had to answer the same question. Is the church open to women, to gay people, and to Protestants in the same way that Jesus is open to everyone? And of course, the answer was yes, because Jesus excluded no one. And so we realized that if Jesus excludes no one, then we have no right to exclude anyone either, from Jesus, from his table, or from his church. Sometimes we can make the mistake of seeing peace as the absence of conflict or tension, and to just want to keep peace for peace's sake. But Dr. King once said, true peace is not merely the absence of tension, but the presence of justice. The presence of justice. And that's important because we all have the ability to create justice. Jesus in the gospel lets his disciples know that love and justice come together, and that we show our love by the justice that we give others and that we give one another. So if they are excluded, then we're called to include them. If they are being put down, then we're called to stand up for them. If they are being harmed, then we demand that they are treated better and we lead by example. He says to his disciples, whoever listens to my words and my teachings, show their love for me. So when Jesus says and models things like thou shalt not kill, love your enemy, forgive one another, he's answering the challenge of peace. So by example, he is pushing us to go beyond thoughts of retaliation, thoughts of win or lose, or my way or your way. He's calling on us to always see each other as part of this larger human family. And so Jesus, in his own ministry, he models peace and nonviolence, his refusal to retaliate against his enemies, his executioners, his inclusion of all those on the margins, of women and children and those who were sick and tax collectors and those of different faiths and those of different political views and different religions and those of different abilities. Because living from a place of nonviolence in a society that has taught us to value violence and to celebrate it, it's a challenge. Jesus is calling on us to be countercultural. He charges us with this work, knowing that it is not going to be easy. In fact, his very disciples, those who followed him closely, referred to Jesus' teachings on nonviolence and the love commandments as hard sayings. So how are we supposed to deal with suffering and violence in the world if we can't hit back? You may have seen a meme that's been floating around on the internet. It has Jesus sitting on a rock and he's teaching his disciples and they're all around him. And he says to them, love one another. And of course, one of his disciples raises his hand. He says, but Jesus, what if they are immigrants or gay or poor? And Jesus looks at him with loving eyes and says, did I stutter? An old man who fought in World War I once told this story. He said during World War I, the German forces were at battle with the English forces. And on Christmas Eve, they would declare a truce. The fighting would stop in honor of the spirit of peace at Christmas time. And on this particular Christmas Eve, suddenly, from the British trenches, a loud, sweet tenor voice began to sing, "The Lord is my shepherd." And the sound floated up into the clear midnight air. And then he said something surprising happened. From the German trenches, a rich baritone voice tuned in, singing, "Der Herr first mein Hirte auf Deutsch." And for a few moments, everybody in both trenches concentrated on the sound of these two invisible singers and the beautiful music in harmony. Well, the British soldier and the German soldier sang praise to God who was their shepherd until the singing stopped and the sound slowly died away. He said, "We huddled in the bottom of our trenches and we tried to keep warm until Christmas Day." And then he said, "Early on Christmas morning, some of the British soldiers climbed out of the trenches into no man's land, carrying a football. One soldier carried a round football. These English soldiers started kicking around the football in a pickup game in no man's land between the trenches. Then," the old man said, "some of the German soldiers climbed out, and England played Germany at football in no man's land on Christmas Day in the middle of the battlefield in France. On that one day, they were committed to the challenge of peace. We can be committed to peace every day of the year. And Jesus calls on us to make it our life's commitment. Why? Because he's our Prince of Peace. He's the one who challenges us to be peacemakers. Jesus goes on in the gospel to say, "But you don't have to do it on your own. I give you peace. My peace I give you. Not as the world gives it, I give it to you." Jesus' peace is a deep peace, a peace of the heart that is concerned about the well-being of others. And it's designed to bypass what appears to be the world's default setting of violence. He knew we would need his help. And so he says, "I come to give you my peace so that you might build on it." I'm reading a book by Douglas Abrams called The Book of Joy. How many of you have read that? A few people. In this book, Archbishop Desmond Tutu is asked to have an intentional conversation with the Dalai Lama. And their conversation is about joy and managing the transitions of life to live in a more peaceful world. And so as they sat together, Bishop Tutu asked the Dalai Lama, he said, "Why, after all that you've been through, why are you not bitter? Why do you not want to retaliate?" And he said this. The Dalai Lama said, "The problem with the world and our education is that it is focused exclusively on external materialistic values. We are not concerned enough with our inner values. We believe that everyone has the responsibility to develop a happier world. And in order to do that," he said, "we must have a greater concern for others' well-being. We must pay more attention to our inner values. We must look inside." Well, 30 years ago, the Catholic bishops in the U.S. published a landmark pastoral letter. It's called The Challenge of Peace, God's Promise and Our Response. It was a political and a moral analysis of the U.S. nuclear policies during the Cold War. And the bishops rejected nuclear war, and they called upon the U.S. to reverse the arms race. And here's what they wrote. "The whole world must summon the moral courage and the technical means to say no. No to nuclear conflict. No to weapons of mass destruction. No to the arms race which robs the poor and the vulnerable. And no to the moral danger of a nuclear age which places before mankind indefensible choices of constant terror and surrender." They said peacemaking is not an optional commitment. It is a requirement of our faith. We are called to be peacemakers, not by some movement of the moment, but by our Lord Jesus. Isn't that beautiful? So whenever I think about the challenge of peace, I always start with myself. And so whenever I'm struggling with conflict, it helps me to do just what this pastoral letter says, to go inside, to ask, what do I think the other person's perspective is? And how can I do better to understand what that is? And then, am I being called to bring more healing and peace to it, knowing that I can reach deep to let the peace of Jesus guide me, guide my heart, and guide my mind, just as Jesus tells us in the gospel? Because peace is not a movement of the moment, but it's a call to look inside. It's a practice. It's a way of life. And when we find ourselves only moving by the moment, we are prone to finding ourselves moving in the wrong direction instead of following the teachings, the prompting, and the example of Jesus. And so looking to the wisdom again of a six-year-old, I was sitting in the car with my six-year-old grandson, waiting for his school bus several years ago. And one came along, and I said, is that it? And he said, no, that's not it. So then another bus came along, and I said, is that it? And finally, I kept saying, is that it? Every time there was a yellow bus. And after a pause and an intent looking, he said to me, no, that's not it. And then he turned to me and he said, Nanny, if you were a dumb nanny and I was born in dumb, I would have got on that bus. So he believed in us, right? And so does Jesus. Jesus believes in us, that we are smart enough to accept this challenge of peace, this gift of peace. And when we do, that means we must not get on the bus of violence. We must not ride on the trolley of injustice or skate on the boards of exclusion, because the challenge of peace calls on us to love in new ways. So the question we must ask in this day and in this age is, what does that look like for me?